The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Our client's position was completely vindicated, that what she did by refusing to make the wedding cake in violation of her conscience was in fact protected by the First Amendment, both as a form of religious expression and free speech. So from that point of view, we're very happy, not just for her, but for everybody that values the First Amendment protections of those precious liberties.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, good afternoon. That's a big story. No doubt about it. We'll talk a little bit about this win for the Christian Baker. First, good afternoon. It is good to be with you today. Really is a delight to be here with you. Thank you for your prayers. I'm still a little bit under the weather today, but able to be here with you. I didn't want to miss it. I've been away from the mic for a little bit, so it's been good to get back and just bring you up to speed on some of the big news stories of the day. We got a lot to get into this afternoon. I want to share some good news, and this is, I think, a good news story. There was this cake designer in California. Her name's Kathy Miller, and she won another case. She won this case brought against her by two lesbians. These two women who wanted her to bake a cake and design the cake for their so-called wedding, and Miller basically refused. But she said, look, you know what? Let me refer you. I can't do this personally. I don't believe in same-sex marriage, so I'll refer you to other designers who I know are pretty good. They're going to do it for you, right? So it wasn't like she says, you know, no, get out of my store. She was just like, conscientiously, I can't do this. Here, let me give you a name of someone who will do it for you. I think you'll appreciate their work. So they went to one of them. They got their cake, but then they complained. That wasn't good enough. They complained to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. Unfortunately, there was a judge there. His name was Eric Bradshaw. He was he's from the Superior Court of California in Kern County. And he saw through the pretense, and he ruled in the baker's favor and noted that she also had denied a request from a guy who wanted to bake, get a load of this, he wanted to bake a seven-layer cake, right? Seven-layer wedding cake. He was going to present it to his wife, along with divorce papers. So she says, no, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm not going to use my talent to do that. So that's it. Let's just hope that the appeals court sustains this ruling. I mean, they're going to fight this. Why? Why are they fighting it? You had your cake made. You went on. It really is to drive home a point and to further advance an agenda. And we've seen photographers. We've seen cake designers. We've seen web designers be victorious in this, but the attack on those who object, it continues. But that's a victory. It's a small little victory, a little good news to start the day. You want another piece of good news? How about this? I had seen a story. I don't know how you're doing economically. I've been looking at, you know, we're closing in on the elections, and one of the big drivers, of course, is the economy. And there was concern just about how that's going to impact the vote. Everyone's favorite government agency, the IRS, we've talked about them in the past. There's some good news coming from them for once. Check this out. Because of inflation, tax bracket ranges are increasing for next year. So the standard deduction and that earned income tax credit you might have, they're also going up. So in addition to that, they've raised the limit on your contribution. If you're an employee and you put money away from your 401k, it can go anywhere from, you know, $2,000 to $22,500. It's a 10% increase over current regulations. So they're going to increase it $2,000. You can put $2,000 more in if you can squeeze that out. So again, this is going to be for next year's income, not for this year. But, I think people will appreciate it. I think it is really valued. We are 2 weeks from Christmas. 2 weeks. I have brain fog. We're 2 months from Christmas. 2 months. I was looking at the calendar today. I'm like, we're 2 months from Christmas already? I love it. It's one of my favorite holidays. I love the season of Christmas, all the lights. I love the music. I love the spirit. I love the food. I love the parties. It's a fun time of year, you know? There's some news out of Turkey that archaeologists actually found the tomb of Santa Claus. What I mean by that, they found the tomb of the real Saint Nicholas. It's under the Church of Saint Nicholas in Antalya. It's the current church was built over the ruins of a more ancient church. that had been covered when the sea levels rose during the Middle Ages. And you've got to remember, if you go back to the Middle Ages, what did we see? We talk about climate changes and swerves. In the Middle Ages, Greenland was actually green. They were growing grapes in England, you know, for wine. And during the Middle Ages, sea levels rose. And they actually built this church over this more ancient church. So researchers using this electronic equipment, they found a space below the current floor. They decided to go digging. And what happened? They found another floor. Right beneath it, where they found a tomb marked as St. Nicholas's. And this actually, believe it or not, and you might think, well, I thought St. Nicholas's tomb was in Barrie. Yeah, it was. You know, at least that's the popular thought, that his bones are in Barrie, Italy, where they were allegedly smuggled in, I think it was 1087, by Italian merchants. But we supposedly have... found the tomb of St. Nicholas. We'll see. Hey, I'm getting news right now. And Maggie, if you have any information, feel free to open your mic and come on with me. But I want to say a quick prayer right now, if you can join me. And I'm going to try to pull this up. But I'm getting word right now that there was a 5.0 earthquake that just hit San Jose, California. So let's just say a memorare, and we'll ask for protection, for peace, and for God's mercy. Remember, most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to your protection, who implored your help or sought your intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly unto you, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To you I come, before you I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not our petition, but in your mercy, hear and answer us. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I'll keep you up to speed on it. We'll look into it for you and bring you the latest in just a couple minutes here. But one other news story here, too, and I want to share a little bit of audio with you. The people of England also seem to be waking up. I think when you go to defund the police, when you try to push gender ideology, when you push stuff that is so extreme to one extent, I think the pendulum can only swing so far. And then it begins to swing back center. Apparently, people are waking up to the reality that transgenderism isn't really what it claims to be, at least the people of England. The National Health Service there announced that kids who are claiming to be transgender, guess what they're going to do? They're not going to just go to the doctors and have this mutilation surgery done on them, but they're going to be referred instead, before anything's done, to psychological care. Find out what is driving this belief in kids. So the Daily Wire was reporting that after a thorough review of the evidence, the NHS now recognizes that children and adolescents identifying as transgender might be experiencing what they're calling a transient phase. And they're saying, hey, docs, don't encourage them to change their names. Don't encourage them to change their pronouns, a social transition. You know, this is not a neutral act. It could have significant effects. You know, England's NHS, as I said, is, I think, waking up. And I'll share a little bit with you. This comes from GB News on what's now unfolding there. They're saying, hey, no gender transition therapies. Listen to this segment from Great Britain News.
Most children who think they're transgender are just going through a phase, says the NHS. Doctors are told to encourage young people to change their names and pronouns. We all have heard on this network about Tavistock, the gender altering clinic that has been shut because of their misbehavior, because a lot of the advice was being offered by gender specialists, hormone doctors, and therapists, instead of what they should have been using, which is pediatric doctors and people who specialize in autism and mental health, so that young people were being encouraged to make changes in their lives that were unchangeable once they changed their minds back again. Apparently, the numbers had gotten too high. The NHS was shocked by the fact that 8.7 per 100,000 people per year in 2021 and 22 had come with referrals to Tavistock, compared with about half that 2 years before.
Yeah, so because it's being encouraged, as they say, even using pronouns and can have a significant effect. And this all comes, this is in relation to the review from Dr. Hilary Cass. And it seems to me it's just a bit of common sense. The only thing I don't understand is why it's taken so long to get here.
Yeah, and these plans are still being going through a consulting phase, and the consultation ends in December. It notes that they want to strongly discourage children from buying hormones from private clinicians. I think if, like, please, just pause for a minute.
Yeah, look, that's England, right? We're seeing this going on here in our country. I think there is some good news there. Look, let's identify what kids are going through. They call it a transient phase, right? Don't change your pronouns. Don't have a surgery. Let's get some psychological counseling. Let's talk this thing out. I think a lot of lives will be better off. We see the suicide rates for those who've gone through these procedures through the roof, right? It's quite tragic. And as you know, I've had Walt Heyer on my program many times. He's a man who transitioned and became suicidal and ultimately transitioned back to a man. If you are interested in this, maybe you've got somebody in your family that you love that is wants to transition or believes they're transgender, check out my podcast. Just go to relevantradio.com. Go find the Drew Mariani podcast, wherever they might be, and type in the name Walt Heyer. Walt Heyer. And check that out. Meg, I don't know if you remember his website. Is it Reclaim? No, it's not Reclaim Sexual Health. SexChangeRegret.com. SexChangeRegret.com. Check that out. That will be a life saver for you. Hey, one other story here. Police in Watson, California have arrested a man they believe is responsible for arson. I've been following these stories. Another attack on a Catholic church. St. Patrick's Church last night. This guy's name was Alberto Melgozzi. He's 36. He was arrested 4 months ago for allegedly committing arson at a Catholic funeral home in the area. And the church said that the fire damaged, you know, two stations of the cross, some stained glass windows, an organ, a whole bunch of other stuff. But the bottom line is with these arsonists, I mean, it is almost, the rate of recidivism is pretty high. I mean, there's something about it. This guy was arrested, got out, and now we're seeing him do it once again. So I'll continue to keep you up to speed on these attacks against the church, and we're seeing more and more of them. On another issue, and I want to talk a little bit, if we could, about an amendment that's happening in our country here. We're talking about transgender issues, right? Well, I want to talk about an amendment. It's called the Parental Rights Amendment. And this is something I think you need to know about. It's something I think that is going to be coming more into the fore. It's something I've been following. I haven't talked a whole lot about it, but I think maybe today's a good day just to put this on your radar. You want to hear an obvious statement? Let me just quote this for you. Quote, the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right. Do you agree with that? You think that's a fair statement? Is there any part of that that you disagree with? The liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, the education, the care of their children is a fundamental right. That to me sounds check, you know, absolutely clear and solid and right? Well, apparently today it's not. Just think about the way that public school boards have been keeping parents in the dark about what their kids are actually being taught in schools. I think that's terrible. I'm so glad my children are out of school. I mean, the challenge that you face as a parent today, unbelievable. You know, especially when it comes to critical race theory, when it comes to what they're teaching your kids about sexuality, what they're teaching them about, you know, this gender fluidity. I don't think it's the place for it. I really don't. It's also legal for a juvenile to get an abortion without telling her parents about it. How did that happen? You know, Maggie and I often talk about how in some schools you couldn't have the local nurse give you an aspirin without your parents' permission. But you can go and have a life-threatening procedure, I mean, something as serious as an abortion, without letting the parents know about this. The whole transgender agenda, that is pushing the idea that kids, hey, don't tell your parents about what's going on. Psst, they don't need to know. This is you. You have the right to be whatever sex you want to be, whatever you identify as. So there was a bill that was going to be introduced in the Virginia House of Delegates that would have required Child Protective Services to visit parents who don't support their kids either attempting to transition from one sex to another or saying that they're homosexual. Can you believe that? Talk about the state getting involved, right? Let me see. Knock, knock, knock. Who is it? Oh, hi. We're from Child Protective Services. We're here to talk to you because I understand you don't want your kid to transition from Drew to Drusilla. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? I mean, but I'm serious. There was a bill some legislator introduced in the Virginia House of Delegates. That's crazy, and it's an overreach of the government. That's why that statement. The liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right. That is the first sentence right now of a parental rights amendment that was introduced to Congress. I think this is critical. I hope it gets passed. It'll safeguard parents a lot of headaches. It'll protect children. And it is for the betterment of families and the country. Will Estrada, he's actually the president of the parentalrights.org. Again, that's parentalrights.org. You can find the Parental Rights Foundation there. He's spearheading this movement. It's good to have him with us today. Hey, Will, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Drew, great to be on with you. Thank you.
I'm delighted to have you here. I'll tell you what, it's bizarre that you would think somebody could knock on your door and question, you know, how you're raising your child, somebody from the state. Absolutely crazy, but we're at a time in the culture right now where this is mainstream, this is common, it's acceptable, and if you hold to traditional values, well, there's something wrong with you, not your child. What's going on? How pervasive is this in the country? And tell me a little bit about what's being proposed.
Absolutely. Well, Drew, we were founded 15 years ago, and for the past 13 years, we've been sounding the alarm about the erosion of parental rights in our country, whether it's through CPS agencies that, as you said, can knock on the door and threaten to remove your children if you don't let them in to talk with you, if someone even files an anonymous allegation against you.
Crazy.
To what's been going on in the public schools. And I'll be honest, Drew, until the COVID-19 pandemic, people were like, yeah, parental rights are great. We live in America. This is a free country. We don't have to worry about parental rights. And it was very difficult to get this message through. And then the COVID-19 pandemic came along, particularly in the context of public schools. I'm actually encouraged because people are finally waking up, Republicans, Democrats, independents, that parental rights are critical and that parental rights are under attack.
Yeah. So the amendment, does this amendment allow for the removal of a child from a home where there is obvious neglect or abuse? I'm assuming, of course, it does, right?
Yeah, it does. So the solution is the Parental Rights Amendment to the United States Constitution, and it was just reintroduced last week by Representative Debbie Lesko. She's a congresswoman from Arizona, mom of three kids. It's House Joint Resolution 99, and I think you cited the first section. It says, Section 1, the liberty of parents to direct the upbringing, education, and care of their children is a fundamental right.
Amen.
That's the highest right. Now, here's an answer to your question, though. Yes. The government still has an interest in protecting the life of children. And so that is Section 3 of the proposed Parental Rights Amendment, which says neither the United States nor any state shall infringe these rights without demonstrating that its governmental interest as applied to the person is of the highest order and not otherwise served. And what that is, Drew, is attorney talk for what's called the strict scrutiny test. Some also call it the compelling state interest test. When you have a fundamental right, that's our highest right in our, you know, in our system of government. And again, our founders, we all know that our rights don't come from the government. They come from God. That's why they're fundamental rights. And government, as our founders said, is instituted to protect these rights, to protect them from threats and erosion and weakness. Yeah, so a fundamental right, the highest right. Think of like religious freedom. Think of free speech. Think of parental rights. But no right is really an absolute right. You can't do defamation, for example. You can't have a religious belief that I can eat another human being, for example.
Right.
And in the same context, you cannot abuse a child. You can't harm or kill or torture a child. And so that strict scrutiny test, compelling state interest test, putting in the proposed constitutional amendment says if the government can show that they have a compelling state interest protecting the life of a child as applied to that individual child, then they could step in and still do a removal if necessary.
You know, I just can't imagine any legislator voting against this. I mean, how can you in a clear conscience do this? I'm assuming this amendment is going to pass overwhelmingly. What's your sense of it?
Well, that would be my hope, Drew. I talk to parents across the country, here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where we're headquartered. We're a national organization. Joe Biden voters, just a year after they voted for Joe Biden in 2020, turned around and voted for Glenn Youngkin on the issue of parental rights. In San Francisco, just this past spring, parents recalled three of their school board members who were just incredibly egregious on the issue of parental rights. Wow. So, you know, when you talk to parents, Republican, Democrat, Trump voter, Biden voter, black, white, Asian, Latino, they want to be able to raise their children. They don't want to outsource it to government bureaucrats. And we've got to get that message to our members of Congress. So we're preparing a full court press. H.J. Res 99, the Parental Rights Amendment, has been reintroduced this Congress. We're in the waning days of this Congress. So, of course, we have the midterm elections. And then in January, Congress will be reconstituted. The amendment will be reintroduced. And that's where we're going pedal to the metal to try and get it ratified.
It's going to get ratified. I have no doubt about it. I've got great hope. Yeah, I'm curious. I was talking to my producer, Maggie, right before the show, and I was saying that we're looking at some of this, just some of this wackiness that's out there. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Hippocratic Oath coming up and how there was a med school in Minnesota that is, you know, swearing allegiance to all sorts of crazy stuff, you know, gender, binary, colonialism, et cetera. And I'm thinking, how do we get to this point? For 180 years, you know, of our country's history, the fundamental right of a parent to direct their upbringing and education of their kid, the care of the child, that's just universal. It was universally recognized. Nobody questioned it. And then all of a sudden, you take a look at the past few decades, and there has been this, like we've entered, you know, an alternate universe, a bizarre world. What happened? How did this change take place where it's, you know, the Congress people, intelligent human beings would think that this is a good. I mean, how did we get to this point is kind of what I'm asking.
It's a great question, Drew, and it's why our founders didn't put into the Constitution that parental rights are a fundamental right. Nobody thought you needed to do that. This goes all the way back to Aristotle, who wrote that the family is the building block of society. Having said that, the battle over parental rights is not necessarily a new one. There's been 100 years of Supreme Court precedent that parental rights are a fundamental right. In the first case, it was 99 years ago, 1923. It's called the case of Meyer versus Nebraska. Nebraska passed a law saying that parents couldn't teach their children, hire someone as a teacher or a tutor to teach their child in a language other than English. And Mr. Meyer was this German teacher who was teaching young German immigrants to read the Bible. He was prosecuted, and the U.S. Supreme Court overturned that prosecution in the case of Meyer versus Nebraska. Then a few years after that, 1925, in Pierce versus Society of Sisters, Oregon had actually tried to ban private education. U.S. Supreme Court overturned that and said in Pierce, the child is not the mere creature of the state. So we've had this good precedent. We've had wins in the past. I think now we're having another concerted effort to really strip parental rights away. And you know, I think, you know, the Supreme Court is one branch of our federal government. It's time for Congress to put into the black and white text of the U.S. Constitution that parental rights are fundamental. It's too crucial to wait anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'll be praying for it. I'll be supporting it. I want to put it on people's radar. I want people to know about it. What can we do to help facilitate this? Call our elected representatives. What do you suggest, and where can people get more information? Because I know this is new to a lot of people.
Absolutely. So www.parentalrights.org, that's our webpage. You'll find the text of the amendment. You'll find a call to action. Essentially, basically, so constitutional amendments are hard. This is the journey of 1,000 miles, starting with the first step, the introduction of the amendment. It takes a two-thirds vote in the House, two-thirds vote in the Senate. President isn't involved, but then it goes straight to the states, and three-quarters of the states need to ratify them.
That's great.
So our members of Congress need to hear from their constituents. Call your U.S. representative. So Capitol switchboard number is simply 202-224-3121, and ask him or her, co-sponsor House Joint Resolution 99, the Parental Rights Amendment to the Constitution that was just introduced by Representative Debbie Lesko.
Do me a favor one more time. Give me the switchboard so people can write it down. And it's House Resolution 99, Parental Rights Amendment. What's the telephone number?
It's 202- 224-3121.
All right. And you might say, I don't know who my representative is. Just tell them where you're from. They'll direct you over there.
Exactly. Yeah, the 21st century, our taxes are doing something. The switchboard is actually very, very efficient. You call in if you don't know who your U.S. representative is. First of all, find out, because the midterm elections are coming up and all 435 of our U.S. representatives are up for re-election. Yep. So that's important. Yep. Elections are important, but call the Capitol switchboard, again, 202-224-3121. If you don't know who your representative is, you give them your zip code, and they'll be able to connect you to the right person.
Well, I'm excited about it. I'm grateful for what you're doing there, too. And, I think this is another point that people have got to get out and vote in the midterms. I mean, quite often the midterm turnout is a lot lower than general, of course. But we need to put well-formed men and women into office that respect these fundamental values of life and, of course, a parent's right to raise and raise their child and protect them from some of these external threats. So keep up your good work, Will. All right? I'm very grateful for it.
Appreciate it, Drew. Thank you for having me on to talk about this.
You got it. That's House Resolution 99, the Parental Rights Amendment. Here's the number. Call now. Don't put it off. Say, I'll do it later. Call right now. Say, hey, I don't know who my elected representative is. Maybe you do. And say, look, here's the information. Please, we need this, right? It's 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Your representatives represent you, all right? Don't forget that. That's why they are in office. Give them a call. Say, this is where I believe. This is what I stand for. You don't have to have a long conversation. You might even get a voicemail. But if enough people respond, it puts it on their radar, and they're all about wanting to stay in office and keep their constituents happy. So I believe fundamentally a parent has the right to bring up their child, to govern their education, to take care of their health. They have a fundamental right to the care of the children. As parents, as Catholics, we talk about this being we are the primary educators of our children, not the state. No one else should interfere in that. So this is a huge, huge step in protecting those fundamental rights. I got to take a short break. If you missed any of this conversation or you want to listen to it again, you want to share it with somebody else, say, oh, you got to hear this. I've got a podcast. Go to the Drew Mariani Show or anywhere podcasts are held, and you'll be able to share this with others. And I would encourage you to do that. When we come back, you're going to hear a bizarre story. It's so strange, you won't believe it. All right? When I come back, I'll tell you what's happening at a Minnesota med school. Don't go away.
Facts and faith over fear.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Students entering the University of Minnesota's medical school were asked to recite a strange pledge during their white coat ceremony. This is back from August.
We commit to uprooting the legacy and perpetuation of structural violence deeply embedded within the healthcare system. We recognize inequities built by past and present traumas rooted in white supremacy, colonialism, the gender binary, ableism, and all forms of oppression. As we enter this profession with opportunity for growth, we commit to promoting a culture of anti-racism.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So did you hear that? I want to talk about it. I know there's a number of physicians, people in the medical community that listen to the broadcast. It's good to have you here. I'd love to hear from you, too. Dr. Gerard Nadal is going to be stopping by in a minute. I want to get his take on this. What you just heard were students pledging their careers to. That's what you heard. They were taking an oath. It wasn't the Hippocratic Oath. That audio came from a medical school ceremony at the University of Minnesota. Shame on you, U of M. Shame on you. That's terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Let me share with you part of the original Hippocratic Oath, which physicians have been taking for centuries. Let me just share a couple sentences out of this. And listen to what they pledge. This is what I want my doctor pledging, right? And I know a lot of physicians are no longer taking these. I don't know why not, but well, I kind of do know why, but it's unfortunate. But look how extreme it goes, right? To pledging to gender binary, to colonialism, to native medicine, a whole bunch of things. Listen to this. This is the Hippocratic Oath. I will use those dietary regimens which will benefit my patient according to my greatest ability and judgment, and I will do no harm or injustice to them. Neither will I administer a poison to anybody when asked to do so. You know, look, we're seeing that today, right, with euthanasia, people wanting to be put out of their misery, so to speak, and end their suffering. So neither will I administer a poison to anyone when asked to do so, nor will I suggest such a course. Similarly, now listen to this, I will not give to a woman a pessary to cause abortion, but I will keep pure and holy both my life and my art. Wow. Huh? I love that. I will. We're going to hear a little bit later today, actually, from another physician. Dr. John Burkowski is going to be stopping by. And he's a man who was an abortionist, killed a lot of children. God's grace prevailed. He actually had a radical conversion. But I think of that particular line, I'll keep holy both my life and my art. I will not give a woman anything that will cause an abortion. And he goes on to say, into whatsoever houses I enter, I will enter to help the sick. I will abstain from all intentional wrongdoing and harm, especially from abusing the bodies of man or woman, bond or free. And whatsoever I shall see or hear in the course of my profession as well as outside my profession, if it be what should not be published abroad, I will never divulge holding such things to be holy secrets, end of quote. So that's just part of the Hippocratic Oath, which physicians have been taking now for centuries. Today, it's usually administered on what is known as White Coat Day, when students in medical schools are given their white coats for the first time. But the oath has changed over time. The original has people swearing by, the Greek gods of healing, and obviously that will go over well in the Christian context. And the very popular phrase, and I think most of us are familiar with, first do no harm, that actually comes, I think, from somewhere in the 1600s. But the main point of the oath has remained the same. Physicians will do all in their power to bring healing, right, to benefit their patient, to do no harm to their patients, no matter who that patient is. That's the oath I want my physician swearing. But what has happened today? And you and I, we live in a very special time. We live in a very different time. Our society has become so distorted, so messed up with this idea that has just gone by the wayside that the University of Minnesota, they held their white coat ceremony. If I was a student there, I wouldn't have read that prayer. I wouldn't have read that oath. I would have never taken that. I would have put the oath of the Hippocratic Oath there, and I would have said that out loud, in a whisper, perhaps. So instead of that version of the Hippocratic Oath, the students go and they acknowledge that they have to recognize inequities built by past and present traumas rooted in white supremacy and colonialism and gender binary and all forms of oppression, it goes on. Wacky. If you're thinking about sending your kid to the University of Minnesota for med school, just be aware, all right? I'm joined today by a molecular biologist, a microbiologist, and most recently he's been profiling more than 100 studies on his blog showing the abortion link to breast cancer. And it's always good to have Dr. Gerard Nadal with us. He's also the president of the Abortion Breast Cancer Coalition and teaches medical students. So I thought it'd be great to get his perspective on this. Doctor, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. How you doing?
I'm well. I'm grateful for your time and your perspective on this. I mean, let me start with a fundamental question. I mean, we know the Hippocratic Oath. How did we get to this point where you've got medical schools, on their white coat day, having kids swear to, taking a pledge to this white supremacy, colonialism, gender binary, and all the other distorted stuff out there? I don't get it.
They kind of remind me of like when you send your kids off to school and you buy their sweaters and coats a little big at the beginning of the year because they're going to grow into them. This is the class of 2026, and they put on those white coats and they're taking this pledge before they've even embarked on their medical studies. So they have a long way to go before they grow into those white coats and those white coats actually mean something about the person inside of it. So it's all filled with all kinds of great PC boilerplate. There is actually some interesting stuff in there I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But the thing I find, Drew, is if one thing characterizes this, and also I want to, remind you, there was at the University of Michigan at their white coat ceremony when they had a faculty student group chose a pro-life faculty member to speak to the incoming class this year, and not about abortion, they got up and walked out simply because this person was pro-life.
Wow.
Walked out incoming medical students walking out on a faculty member. And now you have this at University of Minnesota, where they're standing up and they're making all these pronouncements. You know, there's another line in there. We pledge to honor all indigenous ways of healing that have been historically marginalized by Western medicine. For good purpose, right? Because they haven't been scientifically studied. And when you take herbal medications, there may be a biologically active compound in there that may do some good. But there are thousands of biologically active compounds in there whose effects are unresearched and unknown.
Wow.
So, you know, here's where I lay the blame. I don't blame the students. They're young. They're full of high ideals. God bless them. Wonderful. Yep. Okay. They have to go through their education. I blame the faculty and the administration for permitting this. And I think the students are being used. All right. I really do. How can any scientist or physician permit them to pledge a blanket pledge to honor uncritically, unthinkingly, all former indigenous ways of healing that Western medicine doesn't utilize before they've even learned Western medicine?
Right.
Who does that?
So okay?
It's not the kid's fault. It's really, you know, I think they're being used by the faculty and the administration. I mean, it's my take on it.
And I'm assuming the faculty or somebody there who said, hey, this is a good idea. And they pitched it and somebody wrote it up. And then that's how this thing got passed. I hope it's an anomaly. I hope this is not going to become more prolific in terms of other universities and med schools. I don't, as you point out, there's a lot of problems with this. But I'm assuming it's this wokeism and just this radical ideology that's, you know, infiltrated our higher levels of education, those institutions of higher learning, and has now even entered med school. It's problematic. If I go to a physician, I certainly hope he took the Hippocratic Oath before anything else. Let's talk about some of what's in there. If you had a student who was committed to going beyond, let's say, the gender binary, would you be able to teach that student, doctor? I mean, how do you deal? How would you as an educator deal with those issues?
Well, I think, you know, you can't not teach them unless you just want to resign your post, right? But then you're abandoning the field.
Right.
So I think the thing to do is to teach them the truth. Now, if you're committed to the gender binary, okay, let's break that down for a minute. There's no such thing as a gender binary. There's definitely a sex binary.
Right.
Gender is a system for naming nouns. Sex.
True.
Sex is, you know, like when you step out of the shower and look in the mirror, what do you see? Okay. That's a true binary. We got male, we got female.
Yep.
Okay. So there's definitely a sex binary. I mean, male and female, he created them, right? I mean, it's right there in Genesis. So, however, gender, actually, if you listen to the other side, exists on this continuum.
Yeah.
You know, like there's ever more genders being heaped into the mix here. It's impossible to keep track of them as they go by. So if you're committed to, you know, like if you're committed to ending, you know, the gender binary, you know, then the one thing I want to say is really what you're talking about. This is code for transgendering patients. And it's code for especially transgendering children, because that's who's being targeted. Then what would I do with a student like that? I would hand them the literature from the medical literature that shows that if you do nothing but watchful waiting or supportive counseling with young people that are gender confused, that by their early 20s, 85% of them get their subjective perception lined up with the objective reality of their bodies.
Yeah.
Now, that's scientific, okay? And so I say, you know, and I've said this to students, like, you know, what happens when, you know, because the brain is still developing, right? The frontal cortex of the brain doesn't fully develop until the early 20s. And that's where prudential judgments are made. So, and the insurance industry knows this. And that's why automobile insurance rates are so high for young people, because, you know, they don't always make the best judgments. But that's because that center in the brain's not fully developed till the early 20s. Interesting that 85% of these kids that are gender confused will get that all synced up by their early 20s.
True.
So the question that I just throw back at people is, if that's the case, aren't you jumping the gun in 8.5 out of every 10 cases?
Wow.
And what happens if you surgically or hormonally or both mutilate this child? And then when they get to their early 20s, their brain says, oh, no, wait, I really am a male or a female. But now my body's been mutilated to make it appear to be the other sex. Now you're leaving them with something that's lifelong and can't be reversed.
That's so true. I have a man on the program. His name's Walt Heyer, who suffered some abuse. He had some issues in his childhood, and he transitioned later. He thought he was meant to be. His parents, his grandmother would put him in dresses when he was a little boy. So there was a lot of stuff going on. He transitioned, and for 8 years, he became Jenna. And he was totally unhappy, suicidal, depressed. He realized that he made a major mistake. He transitioned back, and now he's trying to help others avoid this incredible mistake. So you're absolutely right. I mean, the numbers, when you say 8.5 out of 10, that's a pretty big number.
85% of the time, they will, with supportive counseling or just watchful waiting, the subjective perception gets back in alignment with the biological reality of the body.
So if you have a child, listen to that, all right? If you have a child, listen to those numbers. I need to take a short break. When we come back, Doctor, let's talk more. There's a lot to get into here. We'll maybe take a look at, you know, what colonialism and white supremacy has to do with this particular oath. And we'll take your calls. I only have Dr. Nadal for a short time. So if you want to get in, great time to sneak in. Maybe you're in the field of medicine. Maybe you're thinking about entering it. Maybe you've had to deal with this yourself. The number, 888-914-9149. You can call right now. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Pray. Coming up in about 10 minutes, feel free to get in the number, 888-914-9149. We'll also take your calls and questions there. Just a very quick programming note for you. Do me a favor, get your smartphone out right now or go to your calendar and set a reminder. Tomorrow night, Father Rocky's invited me to join him for the Family Rosary across America. And I think it's going to be a great day. Tomorrow's going to be a big day of prayer and fasting for me, and it's going to be a day in which we're going to pray for families. So if there's addiction in the family, if you have divorce looming, if there is just broken relationships, if the family is dysfunctional, if there's anger, let's really pray for that tomorrow. We'll turn to the Mother of God in a special way. And for whatever intention you have, we're going to build a huge gathering of prayer warriors, 7 Central, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Set it. I'm going to join Father, and he and I will pray. I'm going to have him stop by the studio tomorrow, too. He'll pray the chapel with me, so we'll do a double shot. It's going to be a big day of prayer, so I hope you'll join me on that. And one final note. Somebody had sent me an email. Maggie, I know I forwarded you this email yesterday. This month, we are doing a special novena to the Holy Souls. I want to encourage you to get your loved ones in. November 2nd through the 10th, we're going to offer a novena for the souls. You can submit up to about 20 names of those you know that have passed away and that may need your prayers. You just go to relevantradio.com/souls. Somebody had sent me a text and says, you know, is that the right address? They tried it. For some reason, they thought it didn't work. But no, it's relevantradio.com/souls. relevantradio.com/souls. You can start submitting those names, and we will pray together for them. And believe me, as those souls are released into heaven, they become powerful intercessors for you. We need their prayers today, right? Take a look at what's happening in the culture. I was sharing with you about the Parental Rights Amendment. I'm talking today with Dr. Jerry Nadal about the somebody not taking the Hippocratic Oath in a University of Minnesota med school that you know, their white coat ceremony took some bizarre oath. I mean, they were honoring indigenous ways of healing and that have been marginalized by the West, and they were saying all sorts of stuff, pledging to do away with white supremacy and colonialism and a whole bunch of other craziness. And I invited him to join me. He is an educator. He teaches medical students. He's also a molecular biologist and a microbiologist, and it's great to have him back. Doctor, what's the best way to connect with you too before time gets by us? How can people read your work or get connected to your efforts?
Well, I'm on Facebook, and I think that's where I do most of my blogging now. And, you know, they can Google my name. If they want to email me, it's GerardNadal60@gmail.com. So they can do that as well.
All right. Sounds good. And I know one of my producers follows you on Facebook and is always saying, hey, did you hear what Jerry said today? And so it's good stuff. You might want to follow him on Facebook. I want to take some calls. Before I do, I just want to follow up on what I left off on. Part of that oath honors indigenous ways of healing. You talked about the problems with that, but it also, you know, talks about this not just gender binary, but colonialism and white supremacy. And what does all that have to do with medicine?
Well, you know, Drew, actually, there's I think two kind of bright spots in that statement that they made. You know, the very last sentence, we recognize the importance of being in community with and advocating for those we serve. I think that's really great. I'm glad to hear medical students realize that they need to be advocates for their patients. But there really is, I think, structural inequities in some of the healthcare system. And, you know, since they mentioned Native Americans, I will say this. The Indian Health Service is staffed by some mighty heroic people who are working a system that is woefully underfunded and understaffed. And on a lot of reservations, you have physician assistants and nurse practitioners, maybe a doctor coming in and out now and then, but the level of care that's available on reservations compared to, you know, what's available, you know, far away in big cities, it can't even compare.
Wow.
So, you know, when I hear these young people mouthing these words, it's okay to mouth them, but I wonder how many of them will forego lucrative careers and spend their careers working on the reservations.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to make a pledge, make a pledge, but then you have to live it. That's the whole point of raising your hand and swearing an oath. Yeah, you know, so how many of them are going to go and actually live in the inner city or live on a reservation?
Yeah.
You know?
Let's take a few phone calls. We can get back to this white supremacy thing too, but I don't want time to evaporate. From Central California, Stephanie has got a question for you. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, guys. Okay, so recently I heard, especially with all the craziness that's been going on the last 2 years, that doctors now do not have to take the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. And that started supposedly when abortions became legal. Is that true? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go off.
Thanks, Stephanie. Appreciate it.
Hey, Stephanie, thank you. You know, actually, the Hippocratic Oath is not binding. You know, it's aspirational, mm-hmm. You know, more than it's binding. It sets out in broad terms the parameters of what makes a good physician and what behaviors are beyond the boundaries. But it's not anything that's a legally binding oath. Actually, what's binding on physicians is whatever their governing college or body is. You know, like if you're an OBGYN or, you know, if you're a family physician, that's kind of what's binding on them. The standard of care within the profession is what's binding on them. You know, so with the Hippocratic Oath, there have been plenty of adaptations. I think, Drew, you mentioned it before. A lot of Christians would have a hard time swearing to all of these Greek gods. Right? I mean, violation of the first commandment, right? You know, so there have been all kinds of modified Hippocratic Oaths down through the years. But I think what has catalyzed a lot of this is specifically the language of abortion and physician-assisted suicide. A lot of people won't swear to it, and they want to come up with their own oath. So I think that definitely has catalyzed how many different variations. But a lot of people don't even take the Hippocratic Oath at all. They'll swear the oath of Maimonides, the physician.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to Tracy. He's listening in Loveland, Colorado. Hi, Tracy. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show. A little under the weather myself, so appreciate it.
You got it.
All this sort of crazy stuff going on, I just wonder, does this happen in less developed countries, this seems like a first world problem. Like we've just got too much time and money on our hands and figure out ways to change our bodies or mutilate our bodies. People who are struggling for daily subsistence, yeah, are those folks having these same kind of struggles identifying with their gender or whatnot?
That's a great question. Doctor, you want to address that?
I think you nailed it, right? You know, on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, your physiologic needs come first. I think people don't have the time or the luxury to really entertain a lot. If there are people that are kind of confused, gender confused, I think getting something to eat takes precedence over chasing down other things. And then economics absolutely plays a factor here.
Maggie, my producer, I think she saw the documentary. Maggie, did you see What's a Woman, right? Is that it?
I did. I watched Walsh's documentary.
Isn't there a segment in that where he goes to Africa and he talks to these people in third world countries about a man wanting to become a woman or vice versa?
Yes, he's talking to tribes in Africa, and he basically says, you know, what happens when there's a man who wants to be like a woman, and they just laugh at him. They're like,
we've
never heard of that.
That's so funny. Hey, doctor, thank you for being here today. Always good to talk to you. I'm up against the clock. We'll catch up
again.
Drew, keep up your good work, okay?
Thanks. God bless.
God bless you. I'm praying the chaplain, so I'll remember your intentions with mine. In fact, the chaplain's right ahead. We are about 30 seconds away. If you want to get in, the toll-free number for you is 888-914-9149. We'll storm heaven for your needs, your wants, your desires, those prayers that maybe you're struggling with. We'll be right back.